I think I'm going to sit down for the sermon part of it. Thanks, Jamie, for reading the scripture. That kind of helped. In our home, we take turns on Christmas morning opening gifts. But since this is kind of a one in seven kind of Christmas morning, I brought a couple here to open with you. This one, shake it. I don't know. Kind of have an idea. It might be a CD or a DVD or something like that. Good gosh, whoever wrapped it did a good job. Yep, I'm right. It's a DVD. It's Talladega Nights, The Legend of Ricky Bobby. Anybody ever heard of that or seen that movie? Wow. Well, Talladega Nights, The Legend of Ricky Bobby, is an irreverent but hilarious movie. It gets decent ratings on Rotten Tomatoes, too. I think up somewhere above 70%. So if you haven't seen it, I invite you to do so. Who gave me this anyway? That makes sense. Well, there's this scene in it, and I know you've all seen it, and you know what I'm going to be talking about, and it's a blessing that Ricky Bobby and his wife and his two boys and his sick father-in-law have before a meal. And I have it for you here. I don't have it playing, but I'll just kind of read it. And this is how that prayer goes. Ricky Bobby, who's played by Will Ferrell, says, "Dear Lord Baby Jesus, or as our brothers to the south call you, Jesus, we thank you so much for this bountiful harvest of Domino's, KFC, and the always delicious Taco Bell. I just want to take time to say thank you for my family, for my two beautiful, handsome, striking sons, Walker and Texas Ranger, or TR as we call him." He then goes on to say something about his wife that is not appropriate for this audience. "Also want to thank you for my best friend and teammate, Cal Naughton Jr., who's got my back no matter what. Dear Lord Baby Jesus, we also thank you for my wife's father, Chip. We hope that you can use your baby Jesus powers to heal him. Dear tiny infant Jesus." And at this time point, his wife, Carly, interrupts and says, "Hey, you know, sweetie, Jesus did grow up. You don't always have to call him baby. It's a bit odd and off-putting to pray to a baby." To which Ricky Bobby says, "Well, I like the Christmas Jesus best, and I'm saying grace. When you say grace, you can say it to grown-up Jesus or teenage Jesus or bearded Jesus or whoever you want." Carly, his wife, says, "You know what I want? I want you to do this grace good, so that God will let us win tomorrow." Ricky Bobby's a race car driver, and they have a race the next day. So Ricky continues his blessing. "Dear tiny Jesus, in your golden fleece diapers, with your tiny little fat balled-up fists pawing in the air." His father-in-law says, "He was a man, Ricky Bobby. He had a beard. Look, I like the baby version best. Do you hear me? I win the races, and I get the money." Cal, his best friend, says, "Well, I like to picture Jesus in a tuxedo t-shirt because it says, like, I want to be formal, but I'm here to party too because I like to party. I like my Jesus to party." And Walker, one of his sons, says, "I like to picture Jesus as a ninja fighting off evil samurai." Cal says, "I like to think of Jesus like with giant eagle's wings and singing lead vocals for Lynyrd Skynyrd like an angel band." Ricky continues, "Okay, dear 8-pound, 6-ounce, newborn infant Jesus, don't even know a word yet, just a little infant and so cuddly, but still omnipotent. We just thank you for all the races I've won and the $21.2 million. Woo!" Everybody goes, "Woo!" And that kind of ends that scene. You know, sometimes I think we make the same mistake that Ricky Bobby made, and his family. Either we misunderstand what prayer is all about, or we reimagine or recreate Jesus in our own image as someone who can fight samurai or a teenage or bearded Jesus. We don't like to think of Jesus down in the muck with the lepers and the homeless and the demon-possessed. So we just keep him wrapped in swaddling clothes, confined to a manger, non-threatening, non-challenging, non-thought-provoking. Far be it from Jesus to get in the way of what or how we think about things. Far be it from Jesus to impact how we spend our time, our money. Let's just keep Jesus as a soft little baby in the manger. That way we don't have to be confronted by the adult Jesus looking us in the face and asking, "What are you doing with this movement called Christianity?" Yeah, sometimes I don't think we ever want to outgrow baby Jesus. You know, it reminds me of that clip the Skit guys produced a couple of years ago. Maybe you'll remember it. I think I can pull it up here real quickly.
I wonder what it would be like to be born in a manger.
Yeah. I wonder whatever happened to baby Jesus.
He grew up.
What? Wait. So you're saying that the baby Jesus Christmas story is the same as the adult walk on water Jesus?
Yeah. Thanks, honey.
Wow, I just never really put the two concepts together. Wonder what happened to that guy, huh?
He went to the cross.
That's the same guy?
Yeah.
So what you're saying is baby Jesus is the same as cross Jesus?
Yeah.
I mean, there's some time in there, right? I mean, he grew up, he taught people, he lived a perfect life. He died on the cross and came back to life, and, you know, now he lives in our hearts.
That's the same guy? The Jesus that lives in our hearts? Okay, I was really... Oh, wow. Okay, I never really put all those guys together, you know?
Only one guy.
I tell you this. Here's an idea. Maybe we stop just making Christmas all just this once-a-year isolated thing, but we make it an ongoing story about the salvation in our hearts and lives. Up top.
It's the idea.
Okay, we got time for one more. That took a little longer than I thought. Let's see. Let's see what this one might be. Somebody knows how to wrap these things. Oh, it's a book. Huh. It's a book. A Cup of Christmas Tea by Tom Hegg. Illustrated by Warren Hanson. This has become one of my favorite Christmas stories. I was introduced to it only a couple of years ago. Are you any of you familiar with it? No? A couple of you? All right. It speaks of some enduring values, of nostalgia, and the difference we make in the lives of our loved ones. Here, I'll read it to you. Let's see. I mean, I've got these all out of order, but... A Cup of Christmas Tea. The log was in the fireplace, all spiced and set to burn. At last, the yearly Christmas race was in the clubhouse turn. The cards were in the mail, all the gifts beneath the tree, and 30 days reprieve till Visa could catch up with me. And though smug satisfaction seemed the order of the day, something still was nagging me and would not go away. A week before, I got a letter from my old great aunt. It read, "Of course I'll understand completely if you can't, but if you find you have some time, how wonderful if we could have a little chat and share a cup of Christmas tea." She'd had a mild stroke that year which crippled her left side. Though housebound now, my folks had said it hadn't hurt her pride. They said she'd love to see you. What a nice thing it would be for you to go and maybe have a cup Christmas tea. But boy, I didn't want to go. Oh, what a bitter pill to see an old relation and how far she'd gone downhill. I remembered her as vigorous, as funny, and as bright. I remembered Christmas Eves when she regaled us half the night. I didn't want to risk all that. I didn't want the pain. I didn't want to be depressed. I didn't need the strain. And what about my brother? Why not him? She's his aunt, too. I thought I had it justified. But then, before I knew, the reasons not to go I so painstakingly had built were cracking wide and crumbling in an acid rain of guilt. I put on boots and gloves and cap, shame stinging every pore, and armed with squeegee, sand, and map, I went out my front door. I drove in from the suburbs to the older part of town. The pastels of the newer homes gave way to gray and brown. I had that disembodied feeling as the car pulled up and stopped beside the wooden house that held the Christmas cup. How I got up to her door, I really couldn't tell. I watched my hand rise up and press the button of the bell. I waited, aided by my nervous rocking to and fro, and just as I was thinking I should turn around and go, I heard the rattle of the china in the hutch against the wall. The triple beat of 2 feet in a crutch came down the hall. The clicking of the door latch and the sliding of the bolt and a little swollen struggle popped it open with a jolt. She stood there, pale and tiny, looking fragile as an egg. I forced myself from staring at the brace that held her leg. And though her thick bifocals seemed to crack and spread her eyes, their milky and refracted depths lit up with young surprise. "Come in, come in," she laughed the words. She took me by the hand, and all my fears dissolved away as if by her command. We went inside, and then before I knew how to react, before my ears and eyes and nose was Christmas past, alive, intact. The scent of candied oranges, of cinnamon and pine, the antique wooden soldiers in their military line, the porcelain nativity I'd always loved so much, the Dresden and the crystal I'd been told I mustn't touch. My spirit fairly bolted like a child out of class and danced among the ornaments of calico and glass. Like magic, I was six again, deep in a Christmas spell, steeped in the million memories the boy inside knew well. And here among old Christmas cards so lovingly displayed, a special place of honor for the ones we kids had made. And there beside her rocking chair, the center of it all, my great aunt stood and said how nice it was I'd come to call. I sat and rattled on about the weather and the flu. She listened very patiently, then smiled and said, "What's new?" Thoughts and words began to flow. I started making sense. I lost the phony breeziness I use when I get tense. She was still passionately interested in everything I did. She was positive, encouraging, like when I was a kid. Simple generalities still sent her into fits. She demanded the specifics, the particulars, the bits. We talked about the limitations that she'd had to face. She spoke with utter candor and with humor and good grace. Then, defying the reality of crutch and straightened knee, on wings of hospitality, she flew to brew the tea. I sat alone with feelings that I hadn't felt in years. I looked around at Christmas through a thick, hot blur of tears. And the candles and the holly she'd arranged on every shelf, the impossibly good cookies she still somehow baked herself. But these rich, tactile memories became quite pale and thin when measured by the Christmas my great aunt kept deep within. Her body halved and nearly spent, but my great aunt was whole. I saw a Christmas miracle, the triumph of a soul. The triple beat of 2 feet and a crutch came down the hall, the rattle of the china in the hutch against the wall. She poured 2 cups. She smiled, and then she handed one to me. And then we settled back and had a cup of Christmas tea. You know, sometimes the simple act of taking time to have a cup of tea or coffee or eggnog with someone becomes sacramental, holy. You become the presence of Christ to that person, or they become the presence of Christ to you. In the ministry world, we even have a name for it. It's called the ministry of presence, wherein simply being with someone, sitting with someone, even if words are not spoken, can carry with it the presence of Christ, can be a holy experience. Well, that's all I brought this morning. As you continue to celebrate the birth of Christ this day, I invite you to reflect on the reality that this dear 8-pound, 6-ounce newborn infant Jesus, don't even know a word yet, just a little infant and so cuddly, did grow up to offer an alternative and disruptive, at least to the powers of the day, vision of what it means to love God and love neighbor, and to be challenged by that vision in your daily life. And may each of us seek ways to practice the ministry of presence in the days ahead. Amen.